Welcome to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Doc Hill, and today our guest is Josh Eberle from NBA Hoop Mag. That's right, he's our first return guest. We got into today about whether the Raptors' moves were enough to keep up with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and what do we make of this Los Angeles Clipper team? We talked a little bit about the rumors of Hinkie joining the Sacramento Kings, and we also talked about our All-NBA teams. We talked about our Defensive Player of the Year teams, and we probably shocked you a little bit with our all-defensive NBA teams as well. So, you ready to tip it off? Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I feel honored right now. The first returning guest.
I couldn't get the others to come back.
Well, we'll edit that part out, and we'll make sure to tag Snotty Drippin', because I know he's like a podcast leech, and I think it'll hurt his very soul that I've been on more than he is.
Well, he was my last guest, so I don't want to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I don't. I can't do two in a row straight him. It'd be a little awkward. But he was a great guest. You're a great guest, and that's why I brought you back. And I want to jump right back into it. Last time we talked, literally asked you the question: What did the Raptors need to do to compete with the Cavs? And then in that time since we talked, you know, they traded for Serge Ibaka, they got PJ Tucker. You know, what have you seen from the Raptors? You know, is this enough that they can kind of compete with the Cavs? I know they're struggling these days. What do you think?
I think when you asked me the original question, my combination was put in your time, worshiping the deities, roll the dice and hope for the best. But they made some good moves. I really do think they made some good moves here at the deadline. I think Ibaka and actually PJ Tucker, and they did the right things to be as competitive as they could right now, today, without sacrificing the next 5-10 years. Unfortunately, the best player on the team also got injured at that time. So, you know, I applauded the Raptors' moves at the deadline. I think they did everything they could. I think they made the right moves. I don't really know where that takes them this offseason, but I think they put themselves in a position to at least be a threat. And hopefully Lowry, when he comes back in the next week or so here, he's got the ball rolling and he's not the dinged up Lowry we saw in the first round last year, and it all comes together.
Yeah, I'm worried about Lowry because it's his right wrist. And, you know, he had to have surgery on it and everything. I'm more worried about Lowry coming back from his injury than KD. Just because it's his shooting hand, the motion of it. I imagine he couldn't do too much work on it in terms of just getting shots up and stuff like that. So I'm really curious to see what his shot looks like and how his wrist handles all the pressure. I mean, it's his dominant hand. It's the one he dribbles with the most and makes passes on it. Do you think that's – I mean, I imagine that's a real concern. How big of a concern is that for you?
Yeah, it's a huge concern. I'm not really – I don't want to be purely pessimistic, but I'm not optimistic at all. I mean – he was having the best year of his career. He was shooting the best he'd ever shot. Now he's had, you know, X amount of weeks off. It is his primary hand. And it's the history, too. It's the history of Kyle Lowry has had trouble being at 100% come the playoffs. And we saw it last year, and we saw it the year before. And he shot, I mean, last year, what, 40% or something like that? And that was after a really good series against Miami and some good games against Cleveland. The year before, he shot 32%. Now he's come back right before the playoffs with a ton of rust. That primary hand is iffy. I mean, I really would love to see it come together for the Raptors, but I'm really, really hesitant to say, yeah, Lowry's going to come back and they're just going to rock and roll.
Yeah, that might be the biggest question mark everybody's going to have. And it's also hard with two new pieces in Tucker and Ibaka, and him having yet to play a minute with them, that's definitely a challenge kind of meshing in. There takes the time to kind of build that chemistry. And even though I don't necessarily think it's an automatic, he's going to plug right back in and ready to go, because he's got to get used to finding Ibaka and where Tucker wants the ball. And not that Tucker's like a go-to guy, don't get me wrong, but he's got to get used to kind of building that chemistry with those guys. Do you think it's something that they could just slide right into?
It's tough to plug and play. I mean, you know, you've been around the NBA. It's really tough to bring a new guy in to a locker room he doesn't really know, to a culture he's foreign to a tempo, that he hasn't played with, and that's assuming your guys are all healthy, and they haven't been. So, I mean, the best player and the de facto leader of this team, Kyle Lowry, has been out. So now not only have you had to plug and play guys since the All-Star break, but you haven't got to do it with a key piece there. And you look at some of the great teams that come together over the offseason, and they have a camp together, and they have preseason together, and they have a whole year together. And you look at the Warriors, I don't think they've quite figured out, you know, I don't think they're the best team they can be with Durant and company there, and I don't think they were before he got hurt. And, I mean, they had most of a year in the camp, et cetera. The Raptors are going to get 2 weeks of everybody on the court together and hope to punch all the way to the finals. It's not impossible, but it's just not a recipe for success.
Right. And then when you look at them in the standings, they're a game behind Washington. You know, Cleveland and Boston are kind of, you know, each night it's going to be a different 1-2, depending how things shake out. You know, if you're Toronto, I think I'd rather want to play Boston in the second round than Cleveland. Do you think it's smart, you know, if Boston gets the one, you think it's good for them to stay at the 4 seed, or do you think they should try to jump up to the 3 seed? The way, again, a lot of things are going to change. 5 through 8 in the East is just tied up between 2 games, and then if you add in, you know, Chicago knocking on the door, which I think most of the NBA fans are hoping don't make it, you're kind of, anything can change. Who do you want to see in the first round, and how do they match up, you think, trying to get to Boston in the second round?
Yeah, you know, if I'm the Raptors, I definitely want to stay 4. Even in like a crazy scenario where, let's say, Cleveland drops every game for the rest of the season, like they just, their funk is real, and they fall to 4, I would want to fall to 5. I would rather stay away from Washington and Cleveland. If I was a Raptors fan, I'd rather have to go to Boston, win tough games on the road, than have home court advantage and have to play the Wizards or the Cavs. It just, those two teams are a cut above, and maybe I'm underselling Boston, but Boston does not scare me the way that the Cavaliers and actually the Wizards do at this point. And I think if you're the Raptors, you feel pretty good about playing the Hawks. You got more talent. You're a deeper team. You know, you're battle-tested. They're battle-tested. But the Hawks are a team that's in transition. They've kind of known it all year. You don't feel bad about that. I actually think the Raptors would be happy to beat up on the Heat, too. If I'm the Raptors, I don't want to see the Bucks. I don't want to see the Bucks at all. And that's the one team in the first round I really wouldn't want to see.
Yeah, they're quickly becoming that team in January that we saw. And, you know, early in January, they were going on a run. Everybody was kind of afraid of them. Then they had that terrible February. You know, they had a terrible run for a bit, and now they're kind of coming back into strides. I agree with you with all of that. That's the one team I don't think any of the top 4 guys want to play in the first round. They might beat Milwaukee. I'm not trying to say Milwaukee will upset anybody, but I also think it's going to be a hell of a series. It's going to be a tough series, and you never know with Giannis.
No, you don't. I think Giannis would be the best player in that series. And the Bucks, was it 2 years ago? They're even younger, and they almost punched Chicago in the nose. They kind of got that make to them again this year where they've had their struggles, they've had their injuries, they have weird Jason Kidd rotations, but they're winning enough games, and they've got enough talent where you really don't want to take a young team that hasn't won anything with the coming into the playoffs with some confidence after they've turned their season around. That's not the kind of team you want to play.
Right. Well, let's shift focus from the Eastern Conference and go to another team in the Western Conference. The LA Clippers. They last weekend blew a 18-point lead against the Kings in the last 5 minutes of a game. You know, they've looked shaky. They barely beat Phoenix yesterday on the road. What do you make of them?
I realized sometime in the last 2 weeks that I'm just not, I don't have a team anymore. I realized when, this is kind of a long lead up to answer your question.
Go for it.
But I realized as Russell Westbrook just snatched the life from the Dallas Mavericks the other night that it didn't faze me at all. And I grew up a Dallas fan and Dirk's like my all time favorite player. But I just think as Dirk's career winds down, my like individual team loyalty has just been overtaken by covering this league on a whole and being a national fan. And when I think about the Clippers, like they are the team that I'm kind of pulling for deep down in my heart to just make a run because I would love for people to stop dogging Chris Paul. I would love for this franchise and their 40 years of sadness to come to an end. But the team feels rigid inside and out. I mean, they obviously had that terrible loss against the Kings. They've had to, you know, knuckle down on some teams they really shouldn't have had to. And the team itself isn't, I mean, they had that amazing the other night where Redick, Paul, Jordan, and Griffin, they all scored 20 points is the first time ever, and that's a really cool stat. But the team doesn't feel as in sync as it has in past years, and everybody's kind of been dinged up this year. I mean, there's really, really hard, and I'm digging, and I don't have all the numbers in front of me, to find a line of reasoning to somehow say this is the year that the Clippers are going to do it. And what's sad is, like, every other year there's been that opening, whether it was they went up in a series or Blake took the next step or someone got hurt somewhere else in the conference. Like, there's been a line of logic that you could follow for the Clippers making that jump, but I'm having a hard time grabbing a hold of a line right now, and I don't see it.
Yeah, I'm with you to a degree. I think they'll get past Utah in the first round if that's their matchup. Even if they don't have home court, I think they'll be favored just by playoff experience. But you're right in the sense of they haven't had a healthy playoff run maybe since Doc's first year with the Clippers. You know, even during the Vinny Del Negro days, they had always had injuries. They were up 2-0 on Memphis in Vinny's last year, and then Blake sprains his ankle in practice, and then we basically get swept. You know, and then Vinny gets fired, Doc comes in, we're healthy during that run, and we lose to Oklahoma City in the second round after a heartbreaking game five. And I think, you know, you hit it right on. There's something doesn't feel right when you watch them, you know, and they definitely don't have the magic that they had when they started off the year. I mean, early on in the first real month of the season, everybody was like, holy shit, like, these Clippers might be for real. Like, this might be the year. And as soon as everybody started talking about them, they just turned to shit.
Yeah, absolutely. The Clippers started off on absolute fire through, like, 10 games or 12 games or whatever it was. I think they had, like, the best net rating ever or something. There was, like, a ridiculous stat like that where everyone was like, wow, maybe this is the year. And that's the kind of thing that the Clippers do. They give you this hope. There's something to grab onto where they just lay enough breadcrumbs for you to follow the trail to, like, the temple of Clippers where you're like, I could bow down. I could see this year being the year that, like, magic happens. But it just, something has changed from the Blake injury, from the Paul injury to now to this team. It's just, they're uninspiring right now, and maybe they'll turn it around in the playoffs, but they're just not a topic of conversation because they haven't given you that note.
What, assuming they make it to, let's say they get to the second round and get knocked out by the Warriors, the way the standing's set up now, do you blow up the team? What do you do? You know, Paul and Blake are probably going to both, you know, opt out of their contracts. Redick's a free agent. So you have your three of your big four. You're over the cap. So it's not like if you lose one of those guys, you can just replace them. What do you think? Like, you just bring everybody back and run it back again and hope you get lucky? Or, because I look at them, I don't see where they're going. I don't know what they're going to do after this year. Like, bringing everybody back to me, it's like, it's a definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I was fortunate when I was doing the piece for Hoop, or when I was doing the annual issue, like the print issue for Hoop, I got to interview Jamal Crawford, and we were talking, and Crawford's a lot of fun because he's a vet, and he knows what to say, but he's not as guarded as he used to be. He knows he's not in line for a mega shoe deal or anything. You know, he's a pretty straightforward guy. And there's certain questions you ask players, like when you do interviews, and you're always kind of in the back of your mind, like, this guy's going to blow this question off, or this guy's going to, you know, give me the runaround. And so I finally get to the, you know, you work your way up and you build that rapport. And I'm like, okay, Jamal Crawford, you know, tell me, man, you guys went up 3-1 against the Rockets that one year. Paul was hurt for two of those games. That felt more or less like the window was open. What other than injuries is holding this team back? What do you need to punch through? And most players right here give you some nonsense about, oh, I can't really think about that, man. I'm just thinking about this season. We're just going to win. We're just going to whatever. And Crawford said, he said, we are not a mentally strong team. And that's something, like, given our age and how long we've been together, that we need to work on. But he admitted, like, other than the fact that we've had some bad luck, we just mentally aren't all there. And I think with this team, if it doesn't happen this year, it's not going to happen. Paul's getting older. Everybody's a free agent. But I think you still have to bring them back so that you can ship them out and get something for it. Because you can't just let Blake walk. You can't just let Paul walk. Reddick's the guy that might get let go because of the situation where the money is. But I think even though if it doesn't happen this year, you have to move on, you still have to retain those guys so you have pieces coming back and are just starting with a clean slate.
Yeah, and one other thing I'd say, and it's a great, you know, insight from Jamal, just saying that they got to be mentally tough. You don't see it with the refs on a regular basis. It's every game these guys are complaining and arguing with the refs and things like that. And it starts, I think, at least on the ref side of it, it really does start with Doc. You know, the Clippers could probably sell a ticket for his seat because it doesn't look like he uses it that much. I mean, he's up all game yelling at the refs, barking. I mean, you know, doing what coaches do. Not a lot of coaches sit, but for the most part, it's like he never sits. He's literally in the refs' ears from day one. And I think it just gets old, and I think it translates to the other players and all the way down to, you know, even the bench guys, you know, Austin, Jamal, all of those guys. And once the stuff starts to go bad for them, it looks like they kind of lose it a bit.
Yeah, you know, and I don't even remember which game it was, but I'm watching. I can't even remember if it was before Paul or after Paul got hurt. But I mean, this team is always that they're always nattering. Paul, Griffin, Jordan, and Coach Doc, Austin, like they all bitch all the time, and that's part of being competitive. And I get it, but none of them seem to have a firm grasp on like when's a great time to get a tech and fire your boys up, and when are you just digging the hole deeper. And there was a game earlier this year. I can't remember who they were playing, but it was starting to turn on them. They were like down 8 points, and the game was getting a little physical. And I could just tell, you know, Doc was in the angry yell phase, but he wasn't at the refs. He was at his guys. Griffin was on the bench. And I'm like, CP3 technical incoming. And sure enough, a minute and a half later, like Chris Paul's got a tech. Like they're that predictable where you just know that at the slightest bit of resistance, like just the smallest bit of frustration, their ship can just sink. And that is always going to be a problem with this team. And, you know, they haven't been in a ton of situations where it's cost them in a playoff game, but it's absolutely something that you could see costing them in a playoff game.
Yeah, I think it just kind of leads to that meltdown. So, speaking of melting down, I got to tell you about a great gelato place. We've spoken about it before. Uli's Gelateria on Spring Street in the Spring Arcade between 5th and 6th Street. You haven't been to L.A. since we've spoken last time, so I haven't had a chance to take you there. But I got to tell you, Josh, I got there the other day, and they had a new flavor that blew my mind, and it's basil. I love basil on everything else. I didn't know you can make gelato out of it, and I'm just saying it's a party in your mouth, bro.
Yeah, I'll still take you. I mean, All-Star Weekend next year, I'm still going to take you up on this gelato that we talked about last time. But I'm not touching the basil gelato. That's a negative for me.
No, I mean, I'm going to at least get you to do a taste. You're getting a taste at the very least. They get a sample. They give samples. You could try them all. They have a great staff, awesome service. Uli's Gelateria, you can't go wrong. And next All-Star Weekend, we're going to have a picture of Josh at least tasting the basil. I'm gonna make that happen. I'm willing to treat your gelato if you just, you know, taste the basil one.
Yeah. It's gonna be a tough sell.
I'm telling you, man, you'll be shocked. It blew my mind. I was like, I gotta get a taste of that, and it was awesome. Anyways, earlier this week, there was a really random story, kind of came out of the blue, and it sort of disappeared at the same time, but it's got me thinking a little bit. The story was the Sacramento Kings had asked permission to speak to Sam Hinkie because he has a non-compete clause with the Sixers, so it's one of those things they got to get permission. And the idea was that he was going to be – they were talking about a role that would be above Vlade Divac. What is your – opinion of that? Like, you think that's a good fit for both guy, for both organization and for him? What are your thoughts if something like that were to happen?
I don't think there's such things like a bad fit for the Kings at this point. If you bring in anyone who's going to change the culture and do things differently than they've been done the last decade, I think that's instantly a win, given how terrible they've done. And, you know, what I loved about this news was it gave us a bunch of jokes, a bunch of opportunities to make jokes about tanking in the Kings franchise in general. But on a whole, is this the team that Hinkie wants to come out of his stupor for? I don't know. It sounds messy. I don't know how that's going to work with Vladdy. Like, is he going to... I heard, you know, from some back channels that he would still be there, but Hinkie wouldn't be responsible for him, and he wouldn't be responsible for Hinkie. And it just sounds so Kings already and convoluted and a messy mess that I'm not really excited about it. I don't think it's a great move for Hinkie. However, I do like what it offers to the fans, because it would be hilarious if Hinkie turned the Kings around before the Sixers finally figured it out.
Well, what's also kind of funnier is that he's the one that stole the 2019 pick from the Kings. That's going to the Sixers I think it was the Stauskas trade. So he had
I didn't pick. Think about that angle. Yeah.
So it's almost funnier in that regards of like, it's almost like Amin Alhassan, you know, Doc theory, where if you played well against him, or you've played for him, or you're related to him, he's gonna take you on. I feel like the Kings are like, wow, that was such a great deal. He really screwed us. We should get him on our side. Is kind of how it feels. Tim Bontemps had a great point about it, though, and you touched on it too. Like, Hinkie's got to be real smart about the next position he takes. And I think it's, you know, you said it right there. The Kings are not the organization with just how disorganized, dysfunctional they are. I mean, I heard a report today, nothing's been really confirmed or anything, that, like, they're playing, as we speak, they're playing the New Orleans Hornets in New Orleans, and Cousins is hosting some of the Kings minority owners at this game. And that just sounds weird, because that just feels like a divide there already. It's just a weird whole situation. I think Hinkie's got to be real careful about where he ends up. I kind of, if the Kings really did want to kind of have somebody, I think, and bring a little more respectability, and might be somebody that they should look at, it might be a guy like Mitch Kupchak might be somebody they'd want to look at.
Yeah, I haven't heard a word about Mitch after the fallout. I mean, after the immediate fallout and whatever rumors came out, and I haven't heard anything about Mitch in the last couple of weeks. So, I mean, maybe he's on a nice little vacation. I don't really know what his plan is right now, but that's an interesting idea too. But honestly, if I'm someone with a proven track record, if I'm at all desirable as an executive going forward, I want a really clear plan of action from the Kings, and I want some, like, crystal clear promises, because I do not want to stake my, you know, my last chance, because I'm taking a spot after I've been let go with Sacramento, unless I have some pretty nice solid truce in my back pocket.
Right, I definitely agree with you on that. One other idea for Hinkie that I kind of thought of, and I definitely want your opinion on this. I've been saying it for a while. I would love to see the Lakers and Magic not necessarily bring him in, but almost bring him on as a consultant, as a guy, the way the Warriors use Jerry West, and sort of have him outside of the organization and just say, hey, we're kicking this idea around. What do you think? You know, I think that might be a good role for him until he decides to land a bigger role, or he there's something out there that really makes him jump.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like the flexibility of it. Actually, this morning too on NBA radio, they were doing an interview with Steve Nash, and they were asking him, I think it was Joel Myers and Tim Legler who were talking to him, and they were asking, you know, would you ever want to run a team? Do you want to be a general manager? Yada, yada, yada. We know you've done some consulting. And he's like, no, I don't really want to give that up. I put myself in a position to be a 24/7 dad, yada, yada, yada. I don't want to give up that freedom I worked for, maybe in the future. But I kind of like that situation where you come in and out, you have your ties, you get the resume stuffer, you kind of figure out your life in this wake of your last job. I kind of think that might actually be a trend going forward. You see a lot more people coming on in some sort of a limited role, but still associated with the team, instead of committing into a messy, messy franchise on like a 3 or 4 year deal, you know they'll never see through unless they hit gold.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be an interesting thing to watch. So we're down to like the last 2 weeks of the season. Basically, starting tomorrow, we're recording on a Friday evening. This will probably come out Friday night, Saturday morning-ish. We're 2 weeks out from the playoffs beginning. And now it comes to all we've heard nonstop is MVP, MVP, MVP. And I know it's an extremely difficult award to discuss. And let's be honest, it's been beaten with it like a dead horse. So I want to shift from the MVP talk and get an understanding of who's your all NBA team. And I think that's going to be even tougher to put together. There's a lot of guys you could put on that first team. I want to get an understanding of where you're at with that.
See, on the first team, I'm set. My first team is easy. The Durant injury made it super easy for me to punt Durant down. It would have been really tough if he was healthy all year. But I think I go Rudy Gobert at center. I put in Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James at the forward slots. And then I put in Russell Westbrook and James Harden at the guards. Like, honestly, the Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard would have kept me up at night had he been healthy all year. But thankfully, you know, missing that amount of time that he has, that's enough for me to say, well, we'll sneak you in on the second or third team and make my life easy with team one.
I completely agree with your first team. I think, you know, Rudy Gobert, he's the best defensive center in the NBA. I think it's a no-brainer. I think you're 100% right. Once KD went down, it was like, okay, that's easy. Who's on your second team?
Second team is hard. I mean, it's really hard, and every year you kind of get this. There's guys who perform a little bit above their station. We make more out of it than it is with superstars or all-stars or whatever, but they perform a little bit better than you expected them, and guys you expected to be better than them perform a little worse. But, you know, so to help so I'm not just rambling like an idiot, you look at Isaiah Thomas and Steph Curry this year. And I think by all manners of narrative, given that he's carrying a larger load for Boston, given that Durant went to Golden State, you could make a case that, you know, Isaiah Thomas has had a better year than Steph Curry. However, 100 out of 100 times, if you're offering me Steph Curry or Isaiah Thomas, I'm taking Steph Curry. So this is where things get tough with the All-NBA team, because are we voting on their production for this 1 year or how we think they are across the league in general standing? I think that we should take the year into account, solely the year. So I honestly would put John Wall and Isaiah Thomas would be my guards on the second team. Giannis and Jimmy Butler would be my forwards on the second team. And I would stick Anthony Davis at center. And I don't know if that's cheating or not, but that's what I want to do. And I think it's going to be okay. I think he's going to be eligible forward and center.
We got a lot of differences now.
So okay, here we go.
This is good. Because you're right. It's one of those things where I don't think you can go wrong in any way. Of course, Twitter is going to think they're right. It doesn't matter.
Of course, yeah.
But I think Steph Curry's on the second team, and I'm torn between John Wall and Isaiah Thomas. And it's like I lean with Isaiah Thomas just because he has been doing it all year, whereas it really felt like the Wizards have made this push towards the end, you know, and it's tough. It's a real tough decision and tough competition between those two. But I think what Isaiah's done this year, especially down the stretch, I mean, if I had my way, he would be the fifth MVP candidate. I know everybody rakes on his defense, but to be as bad as he is defensively and still be a net positive, that means you're doing quite a lot on the offensive end. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and Boston's not in the first or second seed, wherever they end up without him. It doesn't matter. They're not winning those games. I know everybody wants to talk about the numbers and the analytics behind it all. They're not winning those games without Isaiah Thomas. I'm sorry. I don't care how many points he gives up, because if he gives up a 2-on-1 and he's going to get you a 3 on the other. So I have him there. I have Gordon Hayward as my 3.
Ooh.
I think he's been – he took the leap. I think he's been really impressive. He had a great run there. I have a hard time putting Jimmy Butler in the second second team, just because, like, you know, not going to make the playoffs. That matters to me a little bit, you know. And there's been a lot of kind of craziness within Chicago, and they might make the playoffs. Let me correct that, you know. But they're a team we're all kind of hoping, you know, don't, because nobody really wants to watch them. And unless every one of their games is on TNT in the playoffs, they won't do that well. So I have Gordon Hayward there at three. I have Draymond at the four, at the other forward spot.
Yeah, you know what? I like Green. I think you can put him in there for team accomplishments especially. I get it. But I just think Jimmy Butler and Giannis both took a big step forward this year. They're both carrying weight on really, really not that great teams on a whole. Giannis more so than Butler, but that's the whole of the balancing the year versus the player. Because 100 out of 100 times, I'd rather have Jimmy Butler than Gordon Hayward. And Gordon Hayward's had a really good year, but I just think Jimmy Butler's a better player at both ends. And like that talent disparity, the difference in talent is too much for me to throw Hayward in there. But again, I wouldn't be mad at any of your picks.
Right, and then center for me, I'm going to go with Anthony Davis. I'm with you on that. He's been great all year. I know, again, like it's almost contradictory of what I said about not being in the playoffs, but he's had a shit roster all year. He's been healthy. He's kind of pulling the whole thing together. They had a small run for a while and then just kind of fell off. But I think, you know, center, just also because there's just not enough centers in the NBA where you could really say, like, this guy's, oh, no, forget it. No, it's not him. I'm going Mark Gasol. I can't believe I forgot about my favorite burrito.
You're going Gasol over Davis?
Going Gasol over Davis. For what he does with the Grizzlies.
His playoffs?
I thought the Grizzlies were going to fall out. I had a lot of question marks about him. He's the heart and soul of it. It's a little bit extreme, but I'm going to go with the little burrito in Memphis. So, yeah.
Are we going to do third, too?
Yeah. Talk to me about your third All-NBA team.
Okay, because third is always so hard because you want to throw guys.
Yeah. It shows how great this NBA season has been, actually. Like, we have had – this has been a great NBA season. We have nonstop three different guys talked about for MVP going down to the wire. You can talk about 20 to 30 guys for 15 spots for the All-NBA team.
Yeah, so – yeah, I mean, you really can. And even, like, I had these teams picked a couple days ago because I was going to do a predictions – or not a predictions piece, but, like, my picks kind of piece. And I've already changed a couple things. So just thinking about it again, talking to you. But on the third team, I'm going to just do it, and I don't really care if people feel it's gross. I'm going to put Chris Paul and Kyle Lowry as my guards. I know they both missed time. But Kyle Lowry was having a career year. He's the Raptors' best player when he's out there. I don't think this would be controversial at all if he hadn't missed time. So I'm going to forgive the 15, 16 games he's missed here, and I'm going to put him in. Same with Chris Paul. The other day, just I know with analytics, and it's the same thing with Isaiah Thomas, you were saying, yeah, he's not he's a negative out there via the analytics sometimes. However, he's just – there's enough that he contributes that sometimes the eye test still overweighs the numbers that you're looking at, because you got to sometimes look and say, yeah, these stats put me in the right, you know, they have me looking in the right direction, but they don't always show me the full picture. I mean, the numbers with Chris Paul, the numbers that how vastly different the defense is with them versus without him. And I'm lazy and I don't have the numbers up in front of me, but I tweeted a bunch of them out a couple of days ago. He has a disgusting, it's a disgusting turnaround with Chris Paul on the floor defensively for the Clippers versus when he's not, like, bigger than DeAndre Jordan, up there with a lot of the rim protectors in the NBA. And just because I was curious if this was like an anomaly or like what's going on, I checked versus when he was out and when he was injured and when he wasn't injured. And it was, I think the defensive rating was 6 points worse when he was injured. I looked at Patrick Beverley, I looked at Marcus Smart, I looked at Avery Bradley, I looked at Tony Allen, all of them, the on-off change in defensive rating was like a point when they were on or off the floor. With Chris Paul, it was like 10 points. It's pretty crazy. I know Chris Paul missed 16 games or whatever, but Chris Paul is still Chris Paul, and he would be on my third team along with Kyle Lowry. For forwards, I already went with two guys who missed a lot of time due to injury. I'm still sticking Kevin Durant on this list. There's, like, again, Gordon Hayward's had a great year, and I think we've given credit to the Jazz where we both put Gobert on the first team. But, you know, Kevin Durant is a million times better than Gordon Hayward every day, even at 75%. So I'm sticking Kevin Durant on the list, sticking Draymond Green on the list as my other forward, because he or Gobert will be Defensive Player of the Year, and those two guys should make these teams every year. Being the best defensive player in the year obviously should matter. And finally, center's really tough. I really want to stick Jokic in there, but with Denver probably falling out of the playoffs, I would go with Marc Gasol.
Okay. Okay. So, again, some differences here, but again, it's just hard. And if anybody really wants to kind of question us, just do it, and then you'll realize after you've put your 15 names down that you forgot about five guys. You're like, oh, crap, these guys are really good. I have John Wall as my guy because he just barely missed out on the second team, so he's definitely on third team. And I have Damian Lillard as my second team. I have him as my second guard, and I'm sorry, on the third team. I have him as my second guard in that group. Just what he's done to really kind of help will them in there. I know Nurkic helps a ton, but it was Nurkic kind of overshadowed what Lillard was doing on that. He had a stretch of a couple 30-point games in a row, really kind of helped push them back into the playoff race. I have Dame in there. I have, as my three, I have in the forward positions, I have Giannis. And to be honest, I kind of had a brain fart about Giannis in the earlier one. I should actually change it. He should be on my second team, and I'm going to change it. Screw it. I could do this on my podcast. I don't care. On my second team is Giannis instead of Hayward. Hayward's on my third team, and I have him in the with Durant. So I have Hayward and Durant in the forward spots, and at center I'm going to go DeAndre Jordan. Strong defender. He's the backline defense of the team. You made a great argument for Chris Paul, you know, as such an important piece for their defense. But at the end of the day, too, I mean, when you have an eraser in there like DeAndre Jordan, and again, center is just so hard because there's not a lot of them, and the position has changed. I can't wait for the NBA to just say screw it. We're just going to do bigs and guards, and that's the end of it. So. It's an interesting challenge in that regard. So that's my team. A couple interesting like guys that we've both kind of left off. You know in our teams though.
Wait, before you say who is the guy you feel worst about leaving off?
I mean, I feel bad about leaving Chris off. Chris Paul. And I'm going to be honest, I haven't put crazy amount of thought into this team. By the end of this podcast and by the time it posts, everything could change. this is one of those seasons where I feel like every day I'm like, oh, this guy's great. But I think Chris Paul is the guy I feel most bad about leaving off. How about you?
Oh, Curry for me. I feel bad about leaving Curry off. I feel dirty. I think if I was Canadian, maybe I would stick Curry in over Lowry. But no, it's too late. We can never go back. It's not my podcast. I just proved it.
If you want to change, listen, I have no problem with it on my podcast. On the Jump Ball podcast, there are no rules, my friend. If you want to go back and change something, you can go ahead and do that.
No, I liked how I sounded so much when I was making a case for Lowry. Just, I can't do it. But this is the thing. You're going to leave someone off you don't want to leave off. I mean, you could argue Curry was second team easily, and you could also argue the other guys deserve to be there. There is a lot of talent at the top of the league right now.
It just shows how great of a position the league is in right now, that we have this wealth of talent and we have so many great young guys. I mean, God, Giannis is going to be on an NBA first team very soon. I mean, you know, he's going to be in an MVP discussion, hopefully, if everything progresses the way it's supposed to. There's just so much talent within this NBA, you know, that it's an awesome position for them to be in. I would carry this into the rest conversation and how they should change everything, but that's a whole nother podcast, and that's also been kicked to death on every podcast.
Yeah, with Giannis too, though. Neither of us mentioned. I gave Jokic a quick what's up, but he didn't make it. Neither of us mentioned Karl-Anthony Towns, who's been on a crazy tear to end the year here. DeMar DeRozan, though notably has his flaws, has done had a career year, done a good job keeping Toronto in it while Lowry's out. I mean, there's a lot of Mike Conley. This might be the best year of Mike Conley's career. He didn't even get a mention. I mean, there's a lot of guys you could make a case for, and it would be, you know, a little bit contrarian, but not to such a degree that you would throw it out. I mean, if you wanted to throw Mike Conley on your All-NBA third team this year, I would not berate you for it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's going to be hard, and it's just, you know, unless there's somebody has something random of, like, I don't know, if somebody has, like, Cousins, to me, shouldn't be on an All-NBA team. You know, unless there's something random and somebody kind of throws out some random thing, for the most part, on all three of these teams, 1 through 15, yeah, whoever, it's so subjective in how you look at things, and do you dock Lowry and Durant and CP for the injuries or not, and, you know, how team play and things like that. I'm a couple of guys who aren't making the playoffs, I'm kind of killing. So it's everybody has a different thing, so it's going to be really hard to do.
Even now I'm kind of playing a game with myself, which is like, who's the worst? Let's just spend a minute, because it's a fun idea. Who do you think is the worst player you could get away with making a feasible argument getting on the All-NBA third team? Like, who's the last guy you could make a reasonable case for?
Gosh, it's Harden, right? No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I mean, I think it's like you kind of have a hard time with guys like, you know, you can go either way on Gordon Hayward. You can go, you know, there's so many guys. I don't even know. Like, I'm sure there's guys I'm even missing who I'm like, shit, I would have put them on my team.
Well, you know what? Neither of us mentioned Kyrie Irving.
Oh, yeah.
Neither of us mentioned Kevin Love. I know you missed some time, too. You know what, who I was thinking, though? Like, Paul Millsap, who never gets any. You know, we spend too much time watching this game and talking about this game for neither of us to have mentioned Paul Millsap. That's a minus one down click for each of us, I think, for not mentioning Millsap. But
I'm more than happy to take that hit. I have not watched enough of Atlanta to begin with. So, and when they make the playoffs, I'm probably just going to kind of, that's the NBA TV game that I'm probably not going to watch too much of. So I'm not surprised I missed out on Millsap, and not to say he's not a good player. I like the way he plays. He's really important to the franchise, of course. So it's interesting, though, but you're right. Like, the Kyrie thing, I actually don't have a problem with Kyrie not making the team just because of how bad that team has performed when LeBron doesn't play.
I'm okay with it, too. There's no one I'm going to be really upset. But, like, even okay, this is my answer to that question I asked you. Goran Dragic. I think you could make a case, given that the Heat were like 11-30 or whatever terrible record they had, are going to sneak into the playoffs, and he's like far and away their best player, shooting like 40-something% from three, 20 whatever points, 6 assists. I don't know. Not killer numbers, but the best player on a team with one of the wildest turnarounds I've ever seen. I would not be mad if a Miami beat writer threw Goran Dragic on the list this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's been awesome. Again, it's just there's so many guys. It's even hard to just keep track of. One thing, though, let's get into the Defensive Player of the Year award, because all three guys who would probably be nominated for it, are, you know, Draymond Green, Rudy Gobert, and Kawhi Leonard are probably the three biggest names. I'd put a fourth in there. Michael Pena wrote a great piece for Vice Sports on Roberson from Oklahoma City possibly being should be considered, you know, a candidate for it. I don't think he'll get it. I wrote a piece recently, and I've gotten some flack on Twitter a little bit from the Utah fans and from the Spurs fans, because I said it's not even close. It's Draymond Green. Who's your winner of Defensive Player of the Year?
Yeah, I might have to check out that piece you're talking about, like with Andre Robertson. I don't think he's better than Tony Allen, and he's so bad offensively, I don't want to give him a vote. But
it's Defensive Player of the Year. Like, offense doesn't count.
But I feel like if your team has to play 4-on-5 on offense because you're that useless offensively, that impacts your defense. Because when this you just don't have to worry about him, and that guy, like, has more energy. They have a guy that's energized because he just watched Buddy run around. I don't know. I'm getting kind of far-fetched out there and away from the question. I think I'd go with Rudy Gobert. I could see the case for Draymond Green, and I think it's going to come down to how much do people – well, actually, what I actually think it's going to come down to is I think Draymond Green's going to win because people feel like he's overdue, coming second 2 years in a row. And, you know, as versatile as he is, I'm not mad at it. I think Draymond Green's an excellent choice. I just think Rudy Gobert has been so consistent this year. And, Hood's been out and Hill's been out and Hayward's been out. You know, Gobert has kept that defense at the very top, and he impacts, you know, the way that teams play. And I don't know the exact – I think David Locke does the best job of selling him, but the amount of times teams come into the paint against Utah is way less, and the amount of times they try to float shots towards the rim are way less. Like, he has a presence around the league as being a great rim protector, and I think he deserves it this year.
So my case for Draymond and Sam – Esfandiari, and I really hope I said his name correctly. If he listens to the podcast, I'm very sorry if I didn't say it correctly. Tweeted this out today. As of today, before their game against Houston, Draymond's defensive rating during this 9-game win streak they're on is 91.7. And without him on the court, it's 103.9 for the Warriors. Like, that's so huge to me, and it's really kind of, it's not that close to me in that regards. When you look at it, it was close at the All-Star break for me between those three guys, and it's tough to make a case for Kawhi because really weird defensive numbers for him and how it's kind of, they kind of turned him into almost a cornerback in the NFL where nobody wants to throw to his guy anymore. So it kind of screwed up his numbers. But since KD went down, you know, again, from Sam, with the Warriors' defensive rating with Draymond Green is 95.0, and without him, 107.4. Like, that's just huge for me. He's the only guy between the three whose defensive rating is below 100. And let's not, to be fair, Rudy Gobert is right there. He's at 100.2, so 0.3 of a point tonight, and it could be, you know, and he'll be right there with it. But I just look at it, and I just don't think it's close in that regards. When you look at over the past, since the All-Star break to now, it's just not close to me. Like, I look at those numbers, and Draymond does everything. He can switch to guards. He could take on your big guy. He guards everybody, 1 through 5. I think Rudy Gobert is the best defensive center in the NBA. I think Kawhi is the best perimeter defender, but I think Draymond's the best defender in the NBA, hands down.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't disagree strongly enough to fight you on it. You know, not to be cliche in the same regards like the MVP race, I'm not going to be upset if Westbrook or Harden win. I'm not going to be upset if Gobert or Green win. I can see the cases for both. And I honestly think Green's going to win because he came second 2 years in a row and people are going to feel like he's overdue. But it's not a bad reasoning. This guy has been, you know, the best or second best defender in the NBA for 3 years. It would be a shame if he wasn't recognized. I'm not trying to cheap out this year or undersell him, but I absolutely agree. He's a beast defensively. He's everywhere. No problems with that decision.
Sweet. A lot of Jazz fans have a problem with my decision. I see tweets in the middle of the night coming my way. Ever since this posted, I've gotten a lot of tweets about it. Since we're here and we got a few minutes, do you want to do just a quick all defensive team? Since we kind of got, I got my first four in already.
Yeah. Let me. Why don't you go first? Because I kind of know who I want. But let me look back because I did this the other day too. Yeah, so you go first.
No problem. So, you know, I have Draymond Green. Obviously, if you can't be the defensive player of the year and then win the award and not be on the first team. You know, Rudy Gobert, Kawhi Leonard, those guys are definitely in. As I mentioned earlier, Andre Roberson, definitely I have him in there just because, you know, the numbers he's put on, the troubling guys. He's all over the place. He guards the Thunder's best. I'm all messed up now. He guards the best matchup. He takes the best player of their opponents. Westbrook doesn't guard the best guy. It's Roberson. So I have him in there. And where I'm torn and where it's hardest for me is between Avery Bradley and Patrick Beverley. And I think at the end of the day, I lean towards Bradley because, again, he makes up for a lot of Isaiah Thomas's mistakes. He takes on some of the biggest challenges, and he's just a tough, tough dude. And it's not to say that Beverley isn't. I think it's really a toss-up in that regard. So that's my first team all defense. We're not going to go into a second team. We're just going to do a first team. So,
oh, we're not going to do second. Okay.
If you have it, go ahead and do it, and then I'll see if I can come up with my second team on the fly. But go ahead with your first and second team.
Okay, so first team, like we're a fair bit different. Rudy Gobert and Draymond Green, they both got to be there. I'm putting Kawhi Leonard there. I know the metrics aren't the same, but it's Kawhi Leonard, and every time I watch him play a meaningful game, he does his job. I mean, he inspires fear. He's got great footwork. He's so long. He makes LeBron work harder than anybody else makes LeBron work. I'm actually going to put in my guard, I'm going to put Danny Green on the first team as well. And I think a lot of people will think this is a reach, but when Duncan retired and this team brought in David Lee and Pau Gasol, there was a lot of, oh my goodness, the Spurs defense is going to be bad, or the Spurs defense is going to take a dump, or the Spurs, whatever, you know, whatever the rhetoric was, nobody thought the Spurs defense was going to stay on top, replacing Tim Duncan with Pau Gasol and David Lee. I mean, two guys that are notably slow and not good defenders and don't bring a lot of versatility. And LaMarcus Aldridge is kind of one of those guys already who I don't really think brings anything good defensively. But, you know, the defense has continued. And I think a big part of that is because of Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard doing what they do, you know, making life hard for perimeter players. So I got Green and Leonard. And I'm also going to take Chris Paul for the big ramble I gave earlier. I think he's the best defensive point guard in the game still when he wants to be. Even against Washington the other night, Wall went for 40, but it's not like Chris Paul was guarding him all night. And there was a possession near the end where Wall came down. It was one-on-one isolation on the wing, and Wall tried to break him down, and Paul just beat him to the spot two or three times before Wall gave it away. Like, that's one example, but honestly, I do think Chris Paul deserves it. And then on my second team, I go Anthony Davis. I think this is the year he finally deserves it. His first couple years, he was so touted as a defensive player, and I think it was premature. We were just excited about what he could be rather than what he was. I think he deserves it this year. I'd go Paul Millsap as one of my forwards. I go Andre Roberson as my other forward. You're saying Roberson, I'm saying Roberson. We're going to have to get an OKC person to tell us which it is because I don't want to say his name wrong. I got Patrick Beverley in the backcourt. I got Patrick Beverley and Marcus Smart in the backcourt. Yes, I put Smart over Bradley. I think Smart's a better defender. I think Bradley's a little bit overrated now. I think his reputation is a year or two ahead of where he's actually at. Smart's a little bit bigger, and he's got that psycho gene. I love that psycho gene in my defensive players. Him and Pat Beverley both got it. Deshaun Stevenson was one of my favorite defensive players ever. And if you watched him, he used to lean. When he was guarding you, it wasn't his hands. He literally put, like, his head on your shoulder or his, like, chest on your chest. And it wasn't a foul. It's just this guy's literally touching you at all times. And defense is a lot mental, and I just love that agitate, that they get under your skin, be an agitator, get any advantage you can. So I'm going to put Beverley and Smart there at the end.
Okay, so I have Beverley, who just missed out on the first team, on my second team as point guard for all defense. I have Smart right there. Reason why Smart's not in the first team to me is he does do a fair amount of flopping. And it's not good acting, you know, and it's just too much for me. At that point, I'm just kind of like, nah, I'm not rolling with you on that. Small forwards, I think that's, I'm doing it on the fly. So, you know, don't anybody come at me. I'm kind of trying, I think maybe Jimmy Butler might be the guy.
Yeah, that's fair.
Power forward, I'm going all big. I'm putting Anthony Davis at the forward spot, and I'm going DeAndre Jordan at the center spot.
I think DeAndre Jordan is a good defensive player. Like, I think he's a positive defensive player. I don't think he's an anchor. I don't think he's that impactful defensively. You know, I think his size and his athletic ability make him a threat, but I don't think he's like a once in a, you know, well, lifetime is really extreme. But I don't think he's as we're apart on DeAndre a little bit.
Yeah, I could tell both times you're just like, really, dude, you have DeAndre in your in your mix. But I do. I just think, you know, he does a good job of not just it's not just the block shots, it's not just the rebounds or altering shots. He's become more vocal this year than any time before. And I think that's a big part of defense that people miss, is he does a great job of trying to coordinate where the guy should be and who the coverage is and all of that fun stuff. So I want to give him credit for that, and I want to give him points for that in that regards. If it's not DeAndre Jordan, how do you feel about Hassan Whiteside?
I like Hassan Whiteside. I think DeAndre Jordan's been better this year, but I think Hassan Whiteside's undersold. NBA Twitter, the NBA community really loves to like decide who's good and who's not good and pretend that's them forever. And especially if that said player has like a bit of an ego or a not friendly personality. And Hassan Whiteside, I think, really ticked off a lot of people when he first came in. People don't want to give him credit as a defensive player. I love the blocks are overrated. And then at the same time, it's rim protection is the most important part of defense. So I think Hassan Whiteside is a very good defensive player.
Yeah, so I'm still going to go with DeAndre Jordan at my five. This was literally done on the fly. So, listen, all my NBA teams in a week could all change and in every position. So don't be surprised if I do a podcast somewhere else and it's 100% different people.
You know what? You know what, Mo? We've been going like an hour. If people are still listening an hour into this podcast, they like the two of us enough to forgive your sins here today. But they can forget this DeAndre Jordan debacle. And if they made it this long, then we've got a couple good fans out there for sure.
You're killing my guy, DJ. I love it. Josh, tell the people where they can find you, plug what you're working on. Let's call it a day for.
Okay, so I'm at Josh Eberle, J-O-S-H-E-B-E-R-L-E-Y. I tweet an awful lot about basketball and sometimes other things. Most of my stuff goes up on HoopMeg. I've got a piece coming out right away next week talking about how subjective the Defensive Player of the Year is, and I have a little bit of fun picking winners over the last 20 years if we actually set some criteria to it. And I did a similar piece on the MVP if you haven't read that. So thanks for having me on, Mo, and thanks for letting me plug my stuff.
No, my pleasure. Josh is a fun follow. Just yesterday, he was upset that nobody got the Basketball Diaries reference.
I was very upset about that. Four people liked that. I was like, come on, man.
Twitter's funny in that sense where when you think you're tweeting something that's going to be great, and it gets no traction, and you're just – and then some random thing you say starts blowing up, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, absolutely. I hate that. You have, like – sometimes, like, I'll just – my girlfriend and I will be watching a show or we'll be at dinner or something. She'll be like, get off your phone. Why are you smiling? What's so funny on your phone? And I'll be like, babe, I just typed some fire. Like, this tweet is money. It's so money. And then I'll like get up, finish dinner. You know, I don't dare risk the wrath by checking my phone again during dinner. And I'm like, oh, it's going to have 100 retweets. It has like 4 retweets. And then sometimes, yeah, like you said, you tweet something stupid and it has like 100 some retweets. And it just infuriates you. You're like, that wasn't even a good tweet.
Right. And for me, because I'm just obsessive, like anytime my phone looks, I'm like, or vibrates, I'm like, what just happened? So, Josh, thank you so much for coming on. My first ever return guest. And I hope to have you again on down the road. We'll definitely get you some basil gelato as well when you come out to LA.
Yeah, I will come on again as long as you promise never to offer me basil. Basil, I'm the word has escaped me. Ice cream ever again.
we'll discuss this. This will be in our negotiations for the next Josh podcast.
There we go.
Thanks again, Josh.
All right.
And that's it for this episode of the Jump Ball Podcast. Be sure to rate us, like us, leave reviews on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Thank you for listening.